Hello, comrades, and welcome to a brand new episode of Spectre, Season 3, Episode 5. I'm delighted today to be joined by Brian Reynolds. Brian, it's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks, pleasure to be here.
Cheers, Brian. So just to kind of kick us off then, just a wee introduction from yourself, you know, who you are, your affiliations and everything else in between.
Yeah, as Nathan says, I'm Brian Reynolds. I'm the full-time coordinator for the RMT at Kilmarnock Ferries on the west coast of Scotland. I'm also the chair of the Glasgow shipping branch of the RMT. I'm vice chair of the RMT's regional council, and I'm also chair of an organisation called Trade Unions and Communities, which is a relatively new organisation we set up about a year and a half ago in the area, in Edinburgh, in the Nidra area, to try and take the trade unions back into communities where we think there's been a missing link since probably the miners' strike. So that's the roles that I take up on behalf of the RMT.
Yeah, no, cheers for that, Brian. You sound like me, a busy man, too busy for your own good. But no, cheers for that, Brian. And I guess as well, leading off, like you said, with the RMT and the kind of topic we'll come on to discuss, the blockade runners and the memorial itself. But can you give us a kind of overview of the RMT, you know, who you are as a union, a kind of brief history of what you guys surround, and any ongoing disputes that are currently occurring across Scotland or indeed Britain as well?
Yeah, certainly. The RMT is, as we like to class ourselves, a specialist transport union. It was formed in 1990 as a result of a merger between the National Union of Railway Workers and the National Union of Seamen. I was a member of the National Union of Seamen at the time, and both unions had balloted their members on a merger. The choice we had was the TNG at the time, now Unite, or the NUR. The ballot result was a merger to take place with the NUR, which I had actually voted for. And the reason I voted for it is because I thought that during the miners' strike, the two unions that gave absolute 100% support to the miners was the National Union of Seamen and the National Union of Railway. So that came about in 1990. We grew considerably. Our numbers increased considerably because we were seen as a campaigning trade union, and people bought into that. Our general secretary, just shortly after that, was Bob Crowe, who, you know, is revered amongst trade unionists, and his vision, his outlook of how a trade union should operate, members led, you know, encouraged people to get involved. And I think for that day on, the RMT has punched above its weight. I mean, we currently sit with 80 odd thousand members. And I think, you know, most people think we're a bigger trade union than that, because we seem to be in disputes as much as anybody. I think during the recent round of disputes, I think people looked to the RMT for sort of leadership in the early days yet, and I realised that faded away towards the end. So I think people recognise us as being, you know, a trade union that fights on behalf of its members. And I think the general public look upon us like that as well. And I would hope that employers look at us in that way as well. So that, you know, we were unfortunate. Bob died early. You know, we then had Mick Cash was our general secretary, who done great things. And then currently we have Mick Lynch as our general secretary, who has been great, I would say, that dealing with the media over the periods of disruption that we had for the last 2 years. So Mick's been great at dealing with things like that. And, you know, we've moved on with some victories. Probably the best one we had was keeping the ticket offices open when they tried to close every ticket office in Britain. And, you know, we had that outage the other day where people couldn't buy a train ticket out of a machine. So you can imagine if the government and the train operating companies that got their way, you know, there would have been more chaos in the railways. So we're involved in a couple of disputes currently up here at the moment where our members are involved. We're in dispute with ScotRail, probably Caledonian Sleeper, over the public sector pay offers. That's out to ballot. And one of the other disputes that's probably not heard about very often, it's around the seafarers who work with the Royal Fleet Auxiliary. And for those that don't know, the Royal Fleet Auxiliary is a group of vessels crewed by civilians but operate with the Royal Navy. And what they do is they supply the Royal Navy with everything that they need, wherever they are all over the world. There's always a Royal Fleet auxiliary vessel or two with the fleet as they travel around the world. And they supply them with everything, their food, their fuel. There's nothing that goes on a vessel that doesn't come for these vessels. They're replenished at sea, and it's quite a sight to see that all the ships are lined up the road, going at full speed, and the stuff's going over on pulleys. So they're in dispute because they've not had a decent pair of eyes for a great number of years. And of course, when you're dealing with that company, you're dealing with the Ministry of Defence. And we've just had an election, so we've now got a new minister. So we're hopeful, maybe we are way more hopeful than we should be, that we might find some resolve through a Labour minister. But we'll take that as it comes, and hopefully that will get us a result. But that's the two main disputes that we're involved in at the moment.
Yeah, no, cheers for that, Brian. And I think I'll be holding my breath as well to see what the future holds for that. But no, a brilliant, brilliant wee rundown of the RMT there. And definitely agree with the past kind of 2 years with the summer of discontent and the strike wave. There's been a real showcasing of a battle against the media, especially the right-wing media, and the various lies and anti-trade union rhetoric that was spouted during the time of your guys is kind of organising around the rail dispute. So it was very, very steadfast. You've done really well in standing up against that, and it was always a pleasure to see either Mick, Gordon, or Eddie giving it to the right wing media and sending them running, which was fantastic. But yeah, I guess just moving on to talk about the main kind of subject, which I've been looking forward to talk about. It's the Blockade Runners Memorial. I think a lot of folk who are aware of the kind of anti-fascist movement in Scotland, and indeed Glasgow more specifically, they're aware of the Apassionara monument down on the banks of the Clyde itself. But there's also another memorial that I feel kind of gets overlooked, and it's just as important. I think the two play a role in tandem with each other, and that's obviously the Blockade Runners Memorial. So it was just to see if you could give us an insight into who the Blockade Runners were and why their acts and themselves were so important and require such a strong remembrance.
The Blockade Runners Memorial, if anybody's not been to see it's just along from La Passionara. It's a quite an impressive memorial. It came about was done by a guy called Frank Casey, who after a meeting with some Glasgow Shipping Branch members around 2004, Ronnie Moran, who sadly is no longer with us, he passed away earlier this year, Stuart Hislop, Jimmy McCauley. They had a chat, and Frank was telling them about how he thought that the blockade runners should be remembered by a memorial in some place in this country. And that's got everybody thinking about what we could do. And so that then was the start of the plan to build the memorial. And Frank completed it around 2015. And then it came back to the branch to try and arrange a suitable location for it. That took a few years. It wasn't cheap, and we were lucky enough that the RMT lawyers at Drummond Miller at the time, the Thompsons, gave us their expertise in applying for planning permission. We got a lot of trade union branches, including the International Transport Federation, Nautilus International, to support it financially. We had Mark Schultz, who a builder who was prepared to build it, and that then set the plans in motion. It took us a long time, and all that time the bust and the plaque was stored under the SDUC, and it took us a number of years, and it wasn't until March 2019 that we were able to unveil it. And that was a great event, where hundreds of people turned up at it. But what was more interesting is while it was being built, I used to go down every couple of days and see what sort of progress was getting made. And every day when we were down there, people would stop us and say, "What's that all about?" And then you tell them, and then people started saying, "Oh, I know somebody that's related to somebody that knows the story." And the interest all around that community, around the working community and the locals, it grew and grew. But there was a bit of a funny side to it, because when we ordered it, it came with the flag on it from the stone merchants, the builders merchants, but they put the wrong flag on it. Put the flag of Spain. They never put the Republic flag on it. So people were phoning us at the office telling us they had the wrong flag on the monument. This was people that knew nothing about this 6, 7 months earlier, but had obviously researched it. So I quickly went away and got a tin of paint, went in and painted the bottom stripe on it to the purple it is there today. So the memorial is fantastic. And I would like to see, to be honest, I'd like to see more of them around the ports, especially in Wales, where a lot of ships sailed and broke the blockade into the Nazi fascist Spain at the time. Because what was happening was there was British ships going into Spain and they were being attacked, they were being bombed. And there was a navy presence a good bit outside of Spain, but nobody would go near them in internal waters. So these ships were going in, trying to take Spain aid to Spain, especially food, propaganda materials, probably a few other things as well that wasn't there on the manifest. But these ships were getting bombed, they were getting attacked. And from 1936 to 1939, we really don't know how many seafarers lost their lives. We know that there was a great amount in 30 odd ships, torpedoed, sunk, bombed. But it didn't deter these people from trying to take aid into Spain. And some of the northern ports were taken over very early by the fascists. It was very difficult to get the ships in. And a lot of these ships plied their trade with the Republic of Spain, with coal, all sorts of, especially for Wales, all sorts of goods. So the memorial has got a resin plaque on it, and all around it there's rivets, and each rivet represents a vessel that was attacked and damaged, sunk during the Civil War. But of course, when people talk about the Spanish Civil War, they think about the International Brigade, and rightly so, But these people have been forgotten. I do believe there's another memorial in Alicante. I haven't seen it. I do hope to go and visit it one day. But that they're the only two memorials we know of that tell the story and keep the story alive. Men who sailed these vessels, many type of companies, did they know what the cargoes were that were taken in? For example, there was a shop set up in Glasgow to raise funds to take food on these vessels into Spain. And I think they got 1,000 tonne of food, and this was a time when people were really struggling. But the working class community come together, recognised that if we didn't fight fascism in Spain, we'd have been fighting it on the banks of the Clyde soon enough. And nevertheless, I think we're fast approaching that. So it was important that these people were remembered. It was really important that it was in a place like the Clyde, because we don't know where these ships sailed from exactly, but it could be for the very point where we were standing the day we unveiled a memorial. And it was very poignant that might have been the case. So it was great that we could eventually put something up that recognised the heroics of these people taking aid in. But it also exposed the government of the day, Chamberlain of the day, because they knew this was happening and they would not send naval vessels to protect their own people, to protect their own merchant ships. They allowed Franco and Nazi Germany to bomb these ships. And that's a story that's also part of the blockade runners that has to be told. And that's vitally important. They stopped the economy. So the aid that was going in was crucial. And these people richly deserve to be remembered for that. And that is why we've got the memorial here today.
Aye, a fantastic account there, Brian. I don't think I could do it any better. Anytime I'm down the Clyde side, always make sure to pop into to both memorials, especially the RMT one, because it is really stunning. It is a beautifully laid monument. And like you says, the history as well. Aye, you're quite right to say that when we think about the Spanish Civil War, often our minds will firstly go to the International Brigades, the British Battalion, but looking at the wider scale of our trade union involvement, our workers' involvement, it wasn't just workers from their own respective industries or professions going off together as an international brigade collectively heading across. This was a coordinated action from seafarers from these vessels to show true international working class solidarity at its height, like you said, facing against the essentially what was the fate of death, of being sunk, the clear complicity with the British state to allow it to happen, to allow Franco's forces to bolster themselves within the region and without going unpunished. It set a clear precedent for the war to further spill out across Europe as it did happen. And it wasn't till much later on when the British government got involved after the death of so many seafarers to begin with, and not to mention the hundreds of thousands and millions of workers worldwide as a result. And yeah, it's kind of bolsters that message that we still get today. It's that unions shouldn't be involved in broader politics. They should only be focused in their industry. But we can see that shouldn't be the case. That we can't just turn a blind eye to what's happening internationally. We never have. It's always been a feature of the trade union movement, which is all about building working class solidarity, because the actions of one empire or one nation impact the workers of another. So it's clear that we've got to be strong and really linking with our international workers as well, especially when it came to the defending of the Spanish Republic, a legitimate republic that was set to be overthrown by a fascist empire, which obviously eventually it did, for a number of reasons. So it was really important that we played that role from our workplaces, from our unions as well, to what workers were doing internationally within the British Battalion, the other international brigades, all coming from across different parts of the world, some even from Germany. Really, really brave individuals operating from behind enemy lines to support the Spanish Republic. So a really rich history there, and one that has to be remembered from those in our unions and all those workers who took part. So it's an absolutely beautiful memorial. And kind of on that subject of tackling fascism, what do you see the role of the trade unions are in the fight against fascism, both internationally and at home?
I think the reality is that trade unions have got to be at the forefront in the fight against fascism. And one of the roles I think the trade unions have got to get right is educating their members. The vast majority of members probably have never heard of the Spanish Civil War, probably take an interest in fascism. So there's a role for the trade unions to educate their members about what capitalism and what fascism means for us, because we see it every day, and it's become even more relevant with the recent election, where we you see on the TV all the time people like Farage getting airtime and spouting the racist fascist nonsense. But the problem is people are listening to them. We've seen the percentage of the vote. But what I think the trade unions have got to do is start speaking to each other more and more internationally. I mean, members do it through things like the International Brigade Memorial Trust and things like that. But the trade unions have got to, through organisations like the International Transport Federation, they need to start working together so that everybody's saying the same thing and sending the same message, that workers have got to fight against fascism, because it undoubtedly it's coming after us all over. We've seen it in Italy, we've seen it in Greece, we've seen it in more recently in France. And it was workers that came together that stopped Le Pen getting what she was after in France. And I mean, probably a bit more than that we've seen the coming together of political parties, like a Popular Front coming together, the Greens, the Communists, and they came together and stopped that. That happened because of working class men and women, and that's where the trade unions have got to be at the front of that. These guys have got their boots on our necks, and they're coming after us. There's no doubt about that. So the trade unions have got a huge role to play in fighting that and stopping the scourge of fascism, because undoubtedly it's growing and growing. And even when you look at the Palestinian rallies that we're having in this country, we can't take away that there's racist fascist attacks on people that are, going about their business campaigning for a free Palestine. And these people are sitting in the background sniping and waiting. But they'll grow with confidence unless we crush them. And when they grow, they tend to stick together. When the left grows, they tend to start looking for splits. So we need to be careful. We need to make sure there's no splits. We need to be 100% up for the fight against fascists. And I'm sure the trade unions will be at the front of that, but there's still a long way to go. And especially some trade unions who've not even come out and supported the Palestinian cause, disgracefully, probably because they're fighting to lose members over it. But I think if you were to explain to the members, if you were to educate the members on what the real issues are, I'm sure you wouldn't lose too many. And it certainly isn't worth sacrificing your name as a trade union to satisfy a few members. You know, I think some of the union's contributions, if you like, towards the Palestine thing has been disgraceful.
Yeah, no, spot on, Brian. I wholeheartedly echo your message on education. So I think you'll be glad to hear that the STUC Young Workers Conference, the GMB motion in regards to combating fascism, was passed, and that included all about educating young members in the history of fighting fascism. And I think that's absolutely vital. Like you said, we've still got a long way to go to see that kind of brought into the mainstream of where senior members and all that and across different industries, but it has to happen because it's a real threat. It's not a fairy tale. It's not some bygone topic in a history book, just glossing over Nazism. Fascism takes all sorts of different forms, whether it be in Germany and Britain or Chile. Historically, it's taken all sorts of shapes, sponsored by different empires. So it's definitely something we have to give our members political education to understand the kind of economic conditions that breed fascism, that push it to power, and as a result have workers fighting against each other, and popularizing these figures, like you said, like Farage and some of the other figures from different fascist parties and organizations across Britain. And yeah, even the kind of mobilization organization that our unions have to do internally, it has been disgraceful to see different trade unions, my union included, the GMB, and their failure to come out with any meaningful statements on the likes of Palestine or against ongoing conflicts across the globe. It's been stone deaf silence, and it may well be from kind of the empty statements that have been put out. So we definitely need, you know, our unions to be bolstered stronger against an internal failing from higher ups to like you says, just sacrificing the reputation, the history, the meaning of a trade union over the fact of a few members or their key sponsors of industries. You know, it's not worth it. The lives of so many abroad clearly can't be worth such a reputation. So I definitely echo that. And historically, well, I say historically, recently we've done a great job, I think, on a trade union council level, working with the STUC and Erskine and combating the fascists there. I think we really have to bolster our TUC connections. Obviously, you said at the start, where your unions into communities, we have to be building unions back into communities after the close of so many industries from the Thatcher years. We saw these unions no longer be interlinked with their communities because there was no mass industry to build around for people to unite. Which historically we've seen be a big success from the likes of the UCS Work-In, where thousands rallied around to keep it open, and other industries as well. You know, it's something that we really have to kind of build upon and ensure that we're keeping, you know, jobs in Britain, industry in Britain, and we don't just become a nation for importing and turn into a gig economy, 0 hour contracts becoming the norm. We need to continuously fight that. Even if a new Labour government promises us something, we can't just sit back and take a back seat and hope that they're going to deliver. We have to make sure we're trade unions are at the, you know, the fight for that, and ensuring that we're combating those responsible for a housing crisis, those responsible for an energy crisis, because it's all these crises that breed fascism. You know, it's capitalism in decay. These forces all rise out from the woodwork time and time again, whether it's Mosley or anybody else in between who tries to take advantage of the displacement, and the exclusion, the alienation that so many, you know, workers in Britain are facing. And the general election was kind of a testament to that. Shockingly low voter turnout because people no longer believe in the establishment forces to do right by them, and I don't blame them for that at all. But then it leaves that gulf open of what sinister forces will then take advantage of that. And our trade unions, like you says, are the left has to be strong and united and putting a clear message forward. So no, I think you're absolutely 100% right in that. But yeah, I guess just to round it off, it's very much enjoyed, you know, talking about the blockade runners and the kind of political backdrop to it as well for such a beautiful monument. But just to see if you've got any final talking points, Brian, you know, whereabouts can we find you on social media and things like that?
One final point on the International Brigade. I'm proud to say that in our entrance at our head office in London, there's a plaque there remembering the International Brigade and the members that were part of the Union, which was the NUR at the time, who fought in Spain, and that sits proudly in our entrance. So that's fantastic. I mean, the Glasgow Shipping Branch is on social media. We have a X page. I have my own one at Brian Salty. The RMT's got numerous branches, and RMT Scotland's there, where we promote what we do, and the RMT Union one's there also. We also have a Facebook page for RMT Glasgow Shipping Branch, which I'm not on Facebook, so I didn't participate in it, but I do ask for things to be put on it fairly frequently. So that's where we can be found. You know, and if anybody is wanting any information about the blockade runners or wants to be taken down to the monument to show that. And what I would like to see is, you know, when you see there's people doing these walking tours in Glasgow, and I would like to see the monument becoming part of that, because while everybody sees it, appreciates it, there's not enough people seeing it. And you know, and for a long time there was a lot of construction around it, so it wasn't easy to access. That's away now, I believe. So, you know, we're happy to take people down there if they contact us at the RMT office in Glasgow and Hope Street, and we're prepared to walk down and tell people the history of it. And as you said, it's a fantastic history. We hope sometime in the future to be able to put a bench there, but it's trying to do things with the council it's not easy, but we have got plans. And as I say, if anybody contacts us, we're quite happy to give them the story. Sure, we've even got the original draft drawings, which are nothing like what's there today, but still very, very interesting. I mean, the guy Frank Casey, I mean, he was for years been wanting to put a memorial up to John McLean in Glasgow, and hopefully there's some movement on that. Although, like everything, it takes a long, long time. So that's about where we are with it, you know, and it's all I can say is we are extremely proud of what we've achieved on behalf of the blockade runners down there. And it was fitting, it's a shipping branch that's been at the forefront of it. Yeah, that's it, Nathan.
Yeah, no, cheers for that, Brian. That's a great roundup there. And I think even some of the resources you have got on the RMT website for the stuff on the International Brigades that's available to buy as well is
We've just
fantastic.
produced a new booklet in the last few months. We've produced a booklet on fighting fascism, which is available on the website to buy. It's well worth it. It's a well worth read, aye.
Aye. All the resources are fantastic. And, you know, I think the TUC or the STUC, whoever, they'd be doing themselves a disfavour by not kind of incorporating that kind of stuff into.
There's another slight twist to it all, because the Journal of the National Union of Seamen was called the Seamen. That's what it was called in the time. And the editor of that was a guy called Jim Jump, who, you know, when the merger came, the magazine went, and Jim went on to other things. And I never came across Jim for about another 15 or 16 years. And then he, you know, I realised that he was the secretary or the chair of the International Brigade Memorial Trust. And he came up to the unveiling of the monument, and it was absolutely fantastic, because his father was in the International Brigade. He fought in Spain. So, you know, for the Seaman's magazine to unveil the monument, there was a direct link. The editor was Jim Jump, who's now with the International Brigade Memorial Trust. So that was a nice wee surprise and twist to the story for us.
It all comes full circle in the end, doesn't
Yeah,
it?
absolutely.
But no, Brian, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. It's much appreciated, and especially on such an important subject. I think the International Brigades are has a really strong place in, you know, the hearts of many trade unionists as well, communists and socialists. It's a fantastic piece of history that's, you know, showcased what workers organised can do. We can fight in our own streets, and we can fight internationally as well. And that's kind of that solidarity that we need to maintain now into 2024 and into whatever a newly elected Labour government will throw at us and what arises from their actions as well. So, no, thanks again, Brian. Really appreciate
Thank
it.
you. Thanks for keeping the story alive. Fantastic.
Thanks again, comrades, for tuning in to another episode of Spectre. As always, be sure to leave us a like or review on whatever platform you're listening in on. Be sure to share us with your friends, comrades, co-workers, and everyone else in between. The International Brigades. The blockade runners both stand in an important point of working class history. They showcase internationalism, determination, fearlessness, and solidarity. The acts of these men and women from across the International Brigade to the blockade runners must be remembered. It is our history, and it's history that we can't let be slipped under the rug. Monuments such as the RMT's blockade runners, La Passionaria, and all others must always stand as a testament to what the workers of Scotland can achieve. When these monuments stand tall, fascists feel small. We won't allow any force to challenge these monuments. The current standing of all existing ones, or the building of new monuments dedicated to brave working class men and women. Let all the fascist vermin tremble and cower in the shining light of the International Brigades and the blockade runners. Let's send them running by basking them in the shining torch of working class strength, a strength of solidarity, a strength built in the hope for a better future. For our forefathers and mothers from the International Brigades or the blockade runners, their call was no passeran. What will ours be?
Eshlum, not tar hugum le dochud swinchi, na jan analyser mochud linchi. My chain loves hood, so I wish you could do a version for him, but PG. Send me it when you can. He's your number one fan. His first word we called their land, so we understand all of tree cag and. He's only started knee skull and be sure he just thinks you guys are lethal. I know he's a wee bit young, try to keep it from him, down as him or ye hill. Cool guard, just show my new ghost redder. 40 odd breath smells like cedar. Try to talk business to me, which is in your teeth, back at the glitter.
Cap, it's problem shoot. Knuckle and shans, go chocolate live. Stick a wee tune out just for the kids, cause my two ones, they love you the best. Oh, fuck shit, ways up, mess, we're degenerate, who too late to get pissed. And we smoke every penny getting off of our test. There's no act, it's just the way it is, real shit.
You'll find me in a snug of a dimly lit shit run down pub. Face all smug in a place I love, seeing how fucked I can get on government funds. That's another paint done.